If you like Area 45, you're going to enjoy the Hoover Institution's other podcasts, Uncommon Knowledge, The Classicist with Victor Davis Hanson, and The Libertarian with Richard Epstein. Subscribe now to the Hoover Podcast at hoover.org/podcasts. That's hoover.org/podcasts. Hoover Podcast, ideas defining a free society. Hello, it's Saturday, May the 9th, and welcome to Area 45, a Hoover Institution podcast examining the policy avenues available to the 45th President of the United States. I'm Bill Whalen, a Hoover Institution Research Fellow and the Virginia Hobbs Carpenter Fellow in Journalism. My guest today, coming to you via Skype from what I'm assuming is a warm and sunny Southern California, is my friend and colleague Lee Ohanian. Lee is a Hoover Institution Senior Fellow and a Professor of Economics and Director of the Edinger Family Program in Macroeconomic Research at UCLA. He's also the Associate Director of the Center for the Advanced Study in Economic Efficiency at Arizona State University and a Research Associate at the National Bureau of Economic Research, where he co-directs the research initiative Macroeconomics Across Time and Space. Lee, how's your Saturday going?
Bill, I'm happy to join you. It is, we have the low 60s here. It is overcast, but I suspect that sounds balmy to those folks on the East Coast, where I understand it snowed yesterday in Central Park.
Yeah, I think I saw the words Arctic vortex, which just if you're Californian, that makes you happy. But hey, a question for you, my friend, and I surely appreciate you carving some time out of your Saturday for me to do this podcast. In a life more ordinary, what would you and your family be doing today?
Yeah, weekends would usually be devoted towards our son's athletic activities. So we would probably be taking him to his club basketball game, watching that with other parents. And then probably playing a bit of tennis and outdoor barbecue probably later in the day. But my son, instead of playing basketball, he shoots around in the on our driveway hoop, and then he watches old NBA games when Michael Jordan was playing and Magic Johnson.
You know, if there's a silver lining in all this, Lee, it's just when you say things like go to kids' basketball games and barbecues and things like that, it really sounds idyllic, doesn't it?
It does. That's why we pay the big money to live here in California.
Speaking of big money, Lee, let's talk about big money and let's talk about what's due in California. Two big stories this week. First, Governor Newsom announcing that we've segued into phase two of his four phases of reopening California. Phase two is kind of a modified limited hangout, as they would say in the military. It means that some businesses deemed safe can open up. Florists, for example, the governor did a press conference at a floral outfit in Sacramento to announce this. It does not mean you're going to a restaurant anytime soon. It doesn't mean that you're going to a NBA game anytime soon. We're still pretty much on lockdown in that regard, but there's some limited economic activity moving along. He did not give a timeline for when we go into phase three, which is more riskier businesses, and phase four, when you can do large scale things like concerts and professional sports and things like that. So we're in phase two. But the other big story, Lee, was the budget. The governor will unveil his May revise to the state budget, his budget proposal from January. He'll do that on May the 14th. But he did come out this week and tell the world that California faces a $54.3 billion deficit. And you're going to see the word unprecedented as a prefix for that. And that is correct. California has never had a budget shortfall this size. But I would caution those who want to study the California budget that there's such a thing as quantity and quality. In other words, just don't look at the overall number, but look at it as a percentage of the budget. And $54.3 billion equals about a 1 in 4 hole in what Newsom introduced in January, which, Lee, was about $222 billion. So let's begin by talking about phase two and where California stands. How do you think the economy is doing now?
Yes. So thankfully, we're at phase two, which means some more economic activity, some people getting back to work, some businesses opening up, some additional economic activity. But Bill, you know, what I'm seeing is more cars out on highways and on roads than just what would be suggested by moving to phase two. More cars in shopping center parking lots. So I think we're starting to see fatigue among Californians. They've been sheltering at home now for 2 months. They're starting to question why we're not opening up faster. And this fatigue is leading people to go out and do more, despite the governor's rules and despite the governor's best efforts to keep people home. And once those fissures open, I think it's difficult to really bring the herd back in. And so I suspect we'll see the governor's guidelines being somewhat fluid and him walking the tightrope between trying to accommodate the citizens of California and his assessments of what's safe and not safe. So I think it'll be very interesting to see whether these fissures become cracks in the next 2 or 3 weeks, as we've seen up in Northern California and in Modoc County, where Corona is really not even existent. And those folks opened up and the governor went ahead and suggested, well, you know, if we haven't had a coronavirus in X number of days, then yes, you can go ahead and open up. So we're starting to see some of that fluidity in his rules and guidelines. And it's going to be a challenging tightrope for him to walk.
Yeah, I think you're seeing fluidity is a good word to use here, because he faced a situation last weekend with the beaches in Southern California where he saw video, he saw footage of people going out on the beaches. The media coverage suggested the beaches were crowded. Obviously, this was not social distancing as he wanted. And in an act of, well, call it retribution, if you will, or defiance, he shut down the beaches. This sparked a very ugly war of words between him and local leaders in towns like Newport Beach, and they reached a common ground. They reopened the beaches, and I think the governor maybe learned a lesson there. But if 14 days, Lee, was the standard he used for COVID, for being COVID-free, COVID-free of deaths. That may work in Modoc County, where there have not been any COVID deaths. And Modoc County, by the way, has 8,800 people, I believe. It's 2 people per square mile. It's about the most remote stretch of California, if not the entire West Coast. So it works there. But I'm in Santa Clara County, Lee, where we're not going to be COVID-free in terms of mortalities anytime soon. So that 14-day standard doesn't apply to us. So I think the governor is going to have to perhaps kind of adapt that strategy as well.
Bill, I agree with you entirely. In Santa Clara County, which is not, we're not going to see the end of COVID deaths there anytime soon, as you note. Santa Clara County is the center of innovation and technological change with Silicon Valley. It's one of the most important business locations in the world, not just the country. San Francisco is going to be in the same situation. Los Angeles, San Diego, all of these major areas, major creators of economic activity are not going to be in the situation of Modoc County. So we really just can't afford to keep those locations shuttered much longer from the standpoint of how much economic damage that the state and its citizens can endure. As you noted, we're already seeing a devastating budget estimate, much worse than what I had anticipated. And the longer we go on with this, the more economic damage occurs, the more challenging it is to reopen the economy. People become more and more frustrated, not just from staying at home, but from not being able to work, from not being able to buy the things they want. So the governor really is in just a politically very, very difficult situation, a very delicate situation. And yes, I think he is going to have to adapt those guidelines. I don't think it's realistic to say we can't open up until there hasn't been one COVID death in the entire location for 14 days. Because when we compare Modoc County with less than 9,000 people to San Francisco and the San Jose area, it could be months before there's no COVID deaths. So yes, that I suspect he probably wishes he hadn't picked that exact metric. But yes, that is something he's going to have to revisit, and probably soon.
So, Lee, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Stats released its official employment record for April last week. Non-farm payroll employment fell by 20.5 million jobs. Let me repeat that, 20.5 million jobs. America's unemployment rate now stands at 14.7%. It was 4.4% in March. This is the biggest one-month jump since these stats began being accumulated back in the Truman administration in the late 1940s. California, Lee, there's been no formal report on unemployment from EDD, the department that runs job stats in California. I think they're coming out with numbers in 2 weeks, but the state is telling the world that be in store for 18% unemployment. And put that in context, in 2010, the budget mess back then in the height of the so-called Great Recession, California's unemployment, Lee, peaked at 12.4%. So we're looking at something at a minimum 50% worse than what we faced during the Great Recession.
Yes, Bill, this economy is much worse than what we had 10 years ago. Of course, the reasons are very, very different, financial crisis versus the pandemic. But yeah, last week you and I talked about California looking at around 20%. So the 18% is pretty close to expectations, but nevertheless, it's a devastating number. When you mentioned that the country as a whole lost over 20 million jobs, well, just a disproportionate share of that is coming from California. Mm-hmm. California recessions are always worse than the rest of the country. The expansions tend to be perhaps a bit better. And a lot of that is due to the tax system. We're just losing so much revenue because we really concentrate revenue on the highest earners. Their incomes are incredibly volatile. They tend to report much, much lower incomes during downturns. And thus we're getting such an enormous drop in revenue. So the tax system, we really shoot ourselves in the foot when we have a downturn. And this economy really cannot sustain much more damage. We're a very profligate spending state. We, as you noted, the budget was around $222 billion. I suspect 10 years ago, it might have been around 100 and perhaps about 140, something like that. So the money machine keeps pumping dollars into Sacramento, and they find ways of spending, you know, almost every dollar. And we're in a really difficult situation here. And it's going to be very difficult to sustain shuttered economic activity much longer.
Okay. Well, Professor Ohanian, I'm going to be your teacher's assistant today, and let me backfill what you just said. So you guesstimated the budget was $140 billion a decade ago. You were wrong, my friend. It was 130.981. That was the final budget that Arnold Schwarzenegger signed for the 2010-2011 fiscal year. In 2018-2019, Lee, which would be the final budget that Jerry Brown signed before he passed the baton to Gavin Newsom, the budget, Lee, was $205.6 billion. So let me repeat these numbers. In 2010-2011, the budget was almost $131 billion. In 2018-2019, the budget had grown to $205.6 billion. Lee, this is what happens. Ask anybody who just puts money away and watches you just compound slowly. This is what happens, Lee, when you're increasing spending, as California did, by almost 6% a year during the last decade.
Yes, we have a tax system that creates a lot of revenue when the economy is growing and that crashes when the economy sinks. And it makes it really difficult for citizens here because we have legislators who never saw a dollar they didn't want to spend. And when that revenue crashes, people ask, well, what happened? Why is it that where the economy is down 3 or 4%, but revenue is down 20%? So we, as Californians, we've implicitly accepted a tax system that generates that. It's just really indefensible that spending has grown so much since that 2010-2011 fiscal year you noted. And we're constantly confronting a Sacramento that simply spends, and complains there's not enough money. And we're now in sort of a normal situation where everybody's looking for more government spending, more from the state, more from state and local. And, you know, the most important lesson of economics is that there's trade-offs, and dollars need to be spent wisely. They need to be spent wisely on the basis of what citizens want. And we're now living in a California where that doesn't necessarily happen. So I really don't know how they're going to realistically address this without a ton of political fallout over the next year or two.
Right. So let me, for the listener, let me explain how California got into a $54.3 billion hole. First, you have to understand this includes both what is left of this year's budget, which expires on July the 1st, and then the next one, which begins from July to the next July. $54.3 billion, Lee, of that total, $13.1 billion is for the current year ending in July. So that's a lack of revenue that's coming in for this fiscal year. $40.9 billion, Lee, is for the next fiscal year. $41.2 billion is due to lower revenues, and $13.1 billion is from unanticipated spending on health social services, what they've been doing the past few weeks just to spend money left and right. Here's a stat that stands out to me, Lee. Personal income tax, which is what floats the boat in California, it's what drives the train. Personal income tax revenue, Lee, in California is expected to decline by 25.5% in the next fiscal year. Now, you're the economist, I'm not. I want you to explain to me how we could have a decline of 25.5% in income tax when the assumption is that people are going to go back to work.
Right. So I think what they're trying to factor in is not just the volatility of tax revenues, but also the speed at which people get back to work. So to benchmark that, if we go back to fiscal year 10-11, economic activity fell 2% that fiscal year. So state GDP was down only about 2%. Tax revenue is down 20%. What we do here in California is really concentrate tax revenue among the highest earners. In that 10-11 fiscal year, households reporting $200,000 of income or more, revenues from that relatively small group fell 93% that fiscal year. Wow. So there's a combination of really fundamentally changes in incomes being reported over time, the use of losses to offset incomes. And that's what we're taking a look at for the next fiscal year. What surprises me is that they're projecting just a 25% drop in income taxes. So they may be being relatively optimistic about how fast people are going to get back to work. What Newsom has indicated is, you know, that phase four, which would be about as close to normal as the new normal would be relative to what we knew before Corona, he has said that that's many months off. So right. That very much is a minimum of probably 3 or 4% lower state GDP. So that 25%, that 25% drop in tax revenue, I think, if anything, is maybe a little bit Pollyannish.
Yeah. Lee, I want to propose a theory to you that California is kind of caught in a trap of its own making. Granted, we didn't anticipate this kind of situation coming. We didn't anticipate the pandemic laying waste to the economy like we did. But there's a cautionary tale, and the tale would be this. If you go back to 2010, Lee, and you look at what Jerry Brown faced, remember, he called it the wall of debt. The wall of debt was about $34.7 billion, so much less than $54.3. And about a third of that, Lee, was money owed to public schools, cuts made during the recession. He owed money to local governments, to transportation projects. He also inherited a $7 billion debt from deficit bonds, so-called recovery bonds, that Arnold Schwarzenegger convinced voters to approve in 2004. By the way, about deficit bonds, folks, and if California wants to do bonds, this is another cautionary tale, Lee. Those bonds were paid off in 2015, but when you do a bond, you obviously pay interest. The state of California paid $1 million every day for 11 straight years to pay off those bonds. So it's just a striking number. But Jerry Brown, Lee, got out of the situation simply by doing this, keeping an eye on spending, but also enacting Proposition 30 in 2012, which brought in a ton of money and allowed California to put itself in a better fiscal situation. I'm mentioning the tax increase for this simple reason. If you want to go back to another bad budget situation, one that I was almost personally involved with, my old boss, Pete Wilson, 1991, he becomes governor of California, and he inherits a budget mess. And that's because California is in a recession due mainly to the end of the Cold War, the aerospace collapse sector collapsing in Southern California. Lee, it was about a $14.3 billion budget shortfall. And you'll say, well, wait a second, 14.3 is chump change compared to 54.3 billion. But Lee, the budget back then was in the 40s in terms of billions of dollars, not in the 200s of billions of dollars. So he was looking at about a 1-in-3 hole in his budget. Now, here's the point of this filibuster, Lee, and I want to get your thoughts on this. To solve that $14.3 billion shortfall in 1991, Lee, here is what Pete Wilson and the legendary Willie Brown did. They created $1.6 billion in so-called cost shifts. These are all government terms, by the way. Government causes a cost shift. It means, Lee, basically you fiddle around with retirement contribution savings. Second, they came up with $3.4 billion, Lee, in expenditure reductions. You and I would call that spending cuts. But here is the chunk of change. $9.1 billion, Lee, and I just love this term, increased resources. What is an increased resource, Lee Ohanian? It's a tax increase. So
absolutely.
There were accounting changes, fund transfers, but the brunt of that was higher state and local taxes. Here's the point, Lee. $9.1 billion out of $14.3 billion is about $5 and $8, a little over 62-63%. In other words, the state of California could tax its way out of the situation in 1991. Jerry Brown passes Proposition 30 in 2012. California taxes its way out of the situation in 2012. But in 2020, Lee, the train has already left the station. I don't see how Gavin Newsom can go to the voters and call for a tax increase because they've already increased taxes twice in the last decade. So I don't think, a tax increase for more revenue is an option here.
Bill, that's a great point. Yes, the tax train really has left the station, though I think that Newsom and the legislature will dip their toe in the water to see what they can do there. It's a great comparison between now and the early 90s, following the breakup of the Soviet Union and really the crash of the aerospace industry in California, which was really a substantial employer. In principle, from an economic point of view, what we faced in the early 1990s was a more difficult situation because that was really economic fundamentals. Today, the economic fundamentals all were good. This was really just a government-engineered shutdown. And, the simple arithmetic is it's either taxes or expenditures. And, back in the day when tax rates are low, just from a pure arithmetic point of view, you can get a lot of revenue. If you raise the tax rate, the sales tax rate from 3% to 4%, well, that's a 33% increase in the tax rate. That's an enormous revenue increaser. Today we have sales tax rates of around 8%. We raise those 1%. That's not a 33% increase in the tax rate. That's a 12% increase in the tax rate. California's problem is that every emergency situation, which is created by an inefficient tax system, is met with higher taxes that are advertised as being temporary. Every one of those temporary taxes becomes permanent, including the infamous Proposition 30, which was supposed to sunset, I believe, in 17, which was made permanent. So California, being one of the highest tax states in the country, really just can't go back to the well again. Those people who pay most of the taxes, the very high earners, some of them will pay, but many will do things that have been increasing in frequency, such as establish residence in another state. So there's a real limit on how much additional revenue the state can raise from income taxes. A tax on services would be more efficient and would be bringing a lot of revenue. But now a tax on services, such as when you get a haircut, that would hit everyone, not right, just the Steven Spielbergs and the George Lucases and the Mark Zuckerbergs of California. So that is going to be politically unpalatable. So I really don't know what they're going to do with this. They've painted themselves in a corner in which it's such a profligate spending state that it's going to be really difficult without creating enormous political challenges to deal with this and get the budget anywhere close to balance.
Well, they are in a corner, Lee, but one of the ways they're going to try to get out of the corner is they're going to turn to Washington and say, give us money to get us through this. You'll see other states doing this as well. And now I think we're in store for a big political fight. So here's the question. Let's say Washington does want to offer relief to California. I'm not sure Washington wants to paper over the entire $54.3 billion deficit. They're going to say you're going to have to cut some spending. Should Washington just give California the money, Lee? Could the federal government say, we're going to let you borrow the money from us? In which case, now the state's looking at paying off $54.3 billion in what in essence is another bond, maybe an interest-free bond, but it's still debt to pay off. But how much money do you think California could realistically count on from Washington, given that it is a divided Congress and a president who is no fan of the Golden State?
Yes, I'm sure that Governor Newsom and our democratically controlled state legislature, I'm guessing they probably were wishing they hadn't said so many bad things about Trump, because we're now going to go to Washington with hat in hand and along with 49 other governors, hat in hand, looking for a bailout. Illinois did that 2 weeks ago regarding his pension system.
Right.
And, you know, Americans sitting in reasonably well-run states such as Wisconsin are going to say, why am I going to pay for profligacy in California? And that's a very, very reasonable question to ask. This goes back to the old, you know, too big to fail that we faced in 2009, 2010, and so forth. California is indeed too big to fail. So I suspect California will receive money. That money, I think, will come with strings attached. I don't know all the legal implications or restrictions on California borrowing from the federal government, but that would be politically much more palatable to the rest of the country rather than simply just writing a check and saying, here you go, be careful how you spend it. So we'll see how that evolves. But there's no question that we're going to be looking for as big of a handout as we can get. And, you know, the money has to come from somewhere. It's going to be someone's debt. And if it all falls on the federal government, well, you know, guess what? Under President Obama, our ratio of federal debt to GDP held by the public rose to about 80%. Even if we balance the budget going forward right now at a federal level, we'd be probably close to 105%. If we bail out all the states, then we're going to be looking at something like 120 or 130% of debt. And we have the train wreck of demographics and Medicare heading our way. So, you know, any way you slice it, it's going to be a difficult sell. And right now it's about how do we allocate the spending and the risk. California is going to try to offload as much risk and try to get as much revenue as they can. I think there's going to be a lot of pushback.
Yeah, you said a word that caught my interest, Lee. You said the word pension. Our Hoover colleague, Josh Rao, has done a lot of good work on the cost of pensions to California and America. I encourage the listeners to go to hoover.org and look up Josh Rao, R-A-U-H, and see what he's written on this. But David Crane, he is a Stanford lecturer. He is a former advisor to Schwarzenegger. He is kind of a one man walking with a candle through Sacramento trying to have budget accountability. And he put out an interesting a couple numbers the other day, Lee. According to David Crane, 15% of every revised general fund dollar provided to schools is diverted to pensions or what the government calls other post-employment, OPEB, post-employment cost at these schools. He also said that 15% of every other revised general fund dollar is diverted to state and CSU pension and OPEB costs. In other words, pensions are taking $1 out of $7 from things that people generally support in terms of, especially in terms of schools. So in an ideal world, if you're going to look at this budget and look at the situation California's gotten in this, you have to put a lot of things on the table, Lee, and that would include pension reform.
That would include pension reform, and
which we know is not going to happen anytime soon.
No, it's not. It's not. And to Governor Brown's credit, he understood what those issues were and, you know, fought tooth and nail to get at least a little bit of pension reform done. Some of it was associated with what's called the California rule, which indicates that past pension promises simply cannot be broken. Governor Newsom, when he was campaigning, indicated he strongly supported the California rule. And one issue that Wilson and Willie Brown did not have to deal with so much back in 91, 92 was that pensions were a much smaller component of the budget and state paid health care was a much smaller component of the budget. California just jumped off the high diving board into the swimming pool of Obamacare. And we're now paying, you know, roughly, I think close to 25 to 30% of the budget is now going to Medicaid spending. So this is an entitlement difficult to cut. So when we think about modifying the budget, pensions, state paid health care, these are things that are difficult to deal with. And no matter how good legislative intentions or governor intentions might be, these things are very difficult to cut. And that's another reason why this is going to be such a more challenging issue than it ever has been in the past.
I'm going to give you a prediction for the fall election here in California, Lee. A fall election, which now, by the way, is going to be completely write-in ballots, apparently. That was another Newsom announcement this past week. Prediction is this, Lee. We are going to be in for a month of unmitigated corporate bashing. And here's why. The Proposition 13 reform, the so-called split initiative, it is now headed to the ballot. And this is the reform of Prop 13, where you revisit the taxes on commercial property, not residential, but commercial. And it takes properties and adjusts them to 2020 prices. This is a lot of revenue coming into California, Lee. Now, granted, a bunch of that has to go to schools under Proposition 98. But still, you're talking about several billion dollars for the budget. California needs every dollar it can find. So the safest way to get split rolls passed, I think they'll just want to just absolutely bash corporations.
Yes, there'll be more and more discussions about the elites, about Chevron, who's been here forever, who probably has some properties where they pay an incredibly small amount of taxes. This will all be hitting us. I suspect the split roll initiative will pass. And I suspect that more and more businesses will leave California, and that the projections of $12 billion more dollars in revenue that is what the legislative analyst office has come up with, right. I don't think we're going to get that. I suspect it might be closer to $8 billion. And yes, every dollar counts, $8 billion in a $220 billion budget, it moves the needle, but it doesn't get us anywhere close to balance. And at the same time, we lose jobs. We lose corporations, we lose revenue from other sources. So then that effect won't be anywhere close to what, in my opinion, than what the LAO is taking a look at. But I think, Bill, you're absolutely right. The split initiative roll will go through. And in advance of that, yes, we're going to see the corporation bashing. We're going to see the profits numbers, and we're going to see, hey, these folks can afford to pay. And many of them can't afford to pay. As an economist, we don't look at things like afford to pay directly. We look at things like incentives and whether they will find ways to escape those payments. Businesses escape those payments by going elsewhere, just like Bank of America left. Toyota's national headquarters left. Nestle's headquarters left. Wells Fargo left. We go down the line, hundreds, thousands of businesses have left California in the last 20 years because of taxes and a business climate that just is not very profitable. So yes, the split roll initiative is coming. Yes, California will have a less vibrant economy because of that.
Right. And I guess the other question, Lee, would be if the legislature would try to do a tax increase, call it a recovery increase, whatever, however you want to paper it over. Because as we've seen with tax increases in California, not just the split roll initiative, but also Prop 30 in 2012, which we talked about, and it's the son of Prop 30, Prop 55, which extended it. Those were done on the ballot, Lee. So lawmakers, their hands were clean of this. But there's not enough time to put another measure on the ballot, I don't think. So there has been talk about doing another tax increase in 2022. This is directed especially at the wealthy, just like Prop 30. It takes their rates and take them up to 15-16% for state income tax. Do you dare think the legislature would try that?
I think they certainly will try, because there is such an enormous gap between the very top earners in California and lower income households. I think they're going to hope that the progressive spirit will support that. At some point, tax rates can go up, and at some point tax revenue begins to fall. And that was, called the famous Laffer curve. And that happens when economic activity can very easily escape taxes. High income people declaring residence in another state is a very easy way for people to do that. You mentioned Josh Rao. Some of his research shows that just how much that activity is taking place. So the legislatures, you know, they're trying to stick their finger in various holes in the dam. And when they do, another hole opens up, perhaps not quite as big as the one they're plugging, but that offsets much of what they're trying to do. California is really running into limits on how they're going to grab revenue if they simply stick to trying to get revenue from commercial enterprises and from the various highest earners. It's going to have to fall on lower income households. And then perhaps the progressive dream will be over. People will say, hey, I'm making $50,000 a year. I can't afford another $1,000 in taxes. I think we need some different leadership. So I like to think that there might be a small silver lining in this cloud that will sort of get us off just the extent that California has gone off the fiscal rails for the last 10, 15 years.
That's an awfully good question. But another good question, Lee, is if the state's going to learn its lesson, because what is the lesson? Boom is followed by bust. Bust is followed by boom. And if we recover from this pandemic, the economy will recover and there'll be money coming in. And guess what? They'll start spending money again. And again, the trap that California has gotten itself into, yes, the pandemic has devastated the economy, but the situation is complicated by the fact that the state has gone on this spending spree for the past decade and taken $130 billion in budget and taken it up to $222 billion. So, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. I just worry that once we get through this situation and money starts coming back, they'll just start spending money again. So I don't know if you go, so I know there have been efforts in the past, the so-called GAN limit on spending and things like that, but perhaps if there's such a thing as a fiscal watchdog movement in California, Lee, they're going to have to go to the ballot and say thou shalt not increase spending by 2.5% a year or something like that.
Yeah, and Bill, you know, we've been doing this now for over 40 years because 1978-79 Prop 13, that was really the first push of voters to say, hey, we've had enough of this. So this has been going on now for 40, 42 years. When is it going to end? I like to think that just by necessity, by the fact that you simply can't get tax dollars, every tax dollar you want to get, people find ways to avoid those taxes, that it's going to have to come at some point. But the statistics you raise, going from $130 billion budget to a $200 billion budget over the course of 8 years, it is an enormous problem. And if you want to go back even further, back to the days of Pat Brown, inflation adjusted and population adjusted, state government spending today is 5.5 times higher per person adjusted for inflation that it was back in Pat Brown's day. And of course, in Pat Brown's day, we had all those roads built, and we had those schools built, and we had the water infrastructure put in, and we had electrical infrastructure put in. Those were the days when I think politicians, what I like to think of as classical politicians, they figured out what people wanted, they figured out a way to do it bipartisan, they figured out a way to do it efficiently. My column last week for California On Your Mind, which you and I have a lot of fun writing every week, sometimes it makes us tear our hair out, is that San Jose is putting up 8x10 tool sheds, effectively tool sheds, that are being converted into housing for homeless at 80 square feet per person, no kitchen, no running water, no toilet. There's communal bathroom facilities. There's a communal kitchen. That entire project comes in at $700 a square foot. So just think about that, $700 a square foot, only in California. Politicians in the day of Pat Brown simply would not have stood for that. They would have said, this is complete lunacy. There's no reason why we have to spend $700 per square foot on an 8x10 temporary housing for the homeless. We have to change this. So that's what we're missing today. We're missing politicians that are putting taxpayer interests up front and center and saying, I will absolutely make sure your tax dollars are spent wisely and efficiently, and you're going to see the return from these tax dollars. Think of these as investments. You're going to see the return from this. People simply aren't seeing the return from this. They're simply seeing waste. And state legislators are going to have to, are they going to expect people to pass more tax increases? I mean, I'm surprised they've done so far. So maybe perhaps they'll continue to do that. But what we're seeing now is just, you know, sheer lunacy in the budget process and how dollars are being spent.
Final thought comes to mind, Lee, and that is Herbert Hoover had a phrase in the 1920s. He called it rugged individualism. And this was the idea that Americans were basically born with self-initiative and they just wanted to kind of be let loose and set free to do their own thing. We started off this mentioning Modoc County. My next California in Your Mind column gets into this. Modoc County rebelled against Governor Newsom. Modoc County also had a big problem with Pete Wilson, my boss back in the 1990s. To make a long story short, 1994, Lee, there's a rapist who was let loose from California. He had served half his sentence and he was paroled. He was a bad man, and the decision was made he could not be really let loose in any population. He'd go back to his ways. His name was Melvin Carter. He was a horrible human being. He admitted to committing like 100 rapes, many of them here near the Stanford campus. He was a so-called college terrorist rapist. He's just a terrible human being. So Governor Wilson made a decision that instead of letting him loose in Alameda County, where problems would ensue, he decided to dump him in, of all places, Modoc County. Where they had a conservation camp, and they figured he'd just be away from civilization. They'd put an ankle bracelet on him. A couple of parole officers would keep an eye on him at all times. And the citizens of Modoc County, Lee, they just had a conniption. And the point is, the parallel between then and now is they did not like having Sacramento's problems dumped on them. And so the same defiance that you saw out of Modoc County back in 1994, when they didn't appreciate having a rapist parole their community, you see it today in terms of having to abide by standards that just don't apply to them. The point of this is simply this, Lee. I think as we go along with this, you're going to see more acts of defiance, if you want to call it civil disobedience, but maybe getting back to what Hoover meant in terms of rugged individualism, people are just going to do just on their own. And I think what you might be seeing here is something, and I'd be curious about your take on this as an economist, sort of a supersized underground economy in California. The dirty secret of California is there's always been an underground economy. It's called illegal immigration. People are coming to cut your yards and look after your kids and do things like that. But now maybe in the next few months, Lee, you're going to see more of an underground economy in terms of a hairstylist who, if he or she cannot open up their office, they're just going to call their clients and start going to the clients' houses and cutting hair. And the same for nail salons. It's the same for all these people who provide services. If they can't have office hours, they're just going to take their office to people.
Now, that's absolutely what's going to happen. The more costly above the radar economic activity becomes, either because of taxes and or regulations, the more it gets pushed into the underground. And we see countries that have just enormous political problems, such as in Latin America, where as much as 40% of economic activity is estimated to be below ground. I think you're absolutely right. I think we will see that here. I think we will see people doing things informally, perhaps for barter, particularly if taxes rise substantially. And that provides all sorts of new problems for California because we begin not to measure economic activity nearly as well. There's revenue going unreported. There's tax revenue that's not coming in. So, yes, that's exactly what economic logic would predict is going to happen as a consequence of all this.
Okay. Well, Leo Hannon, I've taken up enough of your Saturday already. You need to check on your son. Does he understand Michael Jordan's greatness?
He does. He does. And he also understands, he loves to read the news. He also understands just the nuttiness of what's going on in California. He would like to play in the NBA. Well, he's a big kid. He's 13 years old. He's already 6'2". And he told me, you know, I wouldn't mind playing for the Miami Heat because they have no state income tax there.
I have friends, Lee, and their baby is just really, really tall for his age. And he's kind of a toddler now. And he's actually reached the point where he can kind of toddle for it and grab a little tiny Nerf ball and dunk it through a hoop. And every time he does it, his father goes, yes, you're going to make daddy rich one day.
We can all dream.
Okay. Hey, Lee, I sure enjoyed the conversation. Thanks again, my friend, for taking some time out of your Saturday.
Thank you, Bill. I enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Area 45, a Hoover Institution podcast on the policy avenues available to the 45th President of the United States. And this, as this was a California-based podcast, we've talked a lot about the 40th Governor of California, Gavin Newsom. If you've been enjoying Area 45, please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. And if you wouldn't mind, please spread the word. Get your friends to have a listen. The Hoover Institution is online at www.hoover.org. While you're there, do yourself a favor and sign up for Hoover's Daily Report, which delivers the best work of Lee Ohanian and his Hoover colleagues to your inbox every day. Lee mentioned California on your mind. Lee writes for it on Tuesdays. I write on Thursdays. Lee does economics and policy. I do some policy and a lot of politics. You'll get it in the Daily Report, but check it out. He and I have a lot of fun doing it. The Hoover Institution has Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter feeds. Our Twitter handle is at Hoover Inst. That's at Hoover INST. Lee Ohanian is on Twitter, brave man that he is. His Twitter handle is at Lee_Ohanian. Let me repeat that, at Lee_Ohanian. Ohanian spelled O-H-A-N-I-A-N, at Lee_Ohanian. I am on Twitter, too. My Twitter handle is at Hoover Whalen. That's at Hoover, W-H-A-L-E-N, at Hoover Whalen. For the Hoover Institution, this is Bill Whalen. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, stay strong, stay healthy, and we'll do our best here at the Hoover Institution to help you stay informed. Take care.
This podcast has been a production of the Hoover Institution, where we advance ideas that define a free society. For more information about our work and to hear more of our podcasts or see our video content, please visit hoover.org.